So good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming this morning. This morning, it'll be a little different in the sense that usually I am reading from, commenting on traditional Buddhist teachings of various sorts and traditions, and talking about what they mean, and most importantly, how to apply them to our life. As most of you know, what we practice here is what's called engaged Buddhism. It is a Buddhism that is very practical and real and engaged in all aspects of life, personal, interpersonal, relationship, family, and society. And what I've chosen to speak about, or speak from, to read and comment on, is the story of Ebenezer Scrooge. In other words, known as the Christmas Carol, a story that is very much within our culture. At this time of the year, it is taken out. The movies are shown. Perhaps the stories are read and written. And it is a wonderful story, very meaningful. Dickens was a man of deep insight into certain aspects of human life. And it's usually presented as sort of a morality tale, which it definitely is. But I'm going to probably say some things about that as we read it today, because that's very obvious in the text, that Dickens is making a moral statement about life. But I think what really excites me about this text, and always has, is that it really is about... in the Buddhist context, it is about a man's journey from suffering to enlightenment. It's an enlightenment story, and it really shows us very directly how enlightenment is not just in other words, people on a spiritual meditative path, such as a Buddhist path or other paths, we don't have the franchise on enlightenment. Enlightenment is a very human experience. And I would say from the beginning, if Ebenezer Scrooge can become enlightened in one night, then all of us have that capacity. But I think what the interesting thing is, and what I think I want to share with you today, is that his journey in that one night is really an archetype of the journey that we all need to take. Obviously, within Buddhism, we go about it a little differently in terms of the context and the practices, but there's many similarities. So if you'll indulge me, we will read and comment on A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. So once upon a time, a long time ago, we know that, and I think this is around the middle of the 1800s, around 1860, 70 or so, that this takes place. Dickens introduces us to Scrooge, Ebenezer Scrooge, and Scrooge is, if he is nothing else, he is a miser. He's a miserable miser. But he's more than that. He's a man who has no relationships, has no friendships, is really totally disconnected from life and humanity. And he only lives for one thing, business, and making money. But it seems as if making money does not give him real pleasure. The only thing that gives him pleasure is business. He's a man of business. So we encounter Scrooge in his business on Christmas Eve. And the first episode is we get to meet his nephew, who comes in to wish his uncle a Merry Christmas. And, Scrooge says his famous humbug, which means sort of nonsense. What a big fraud Christmas is. And the nephew says, Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure. I do, said Scrooge. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? What reason have you to be merry? You're poor. Come on, then, the nephew said. What right, then, have you to be dismal? You're rich. So it's a great interchange there, isn't it? And again, this is where Scrooge is saying a lot of humbugs. And the nephew tries to humor his uncle, but his uncle won't be humored, because when I live in such a world as fools as you, Merry Christmas, out upon Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older but not an hour richer? A time for balancing your books and having every item in them through a dozen months presented dead against you? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about saying Merry Christmas should be boiled in their own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through their hearts. So we get a little sense of Scrooge. But his nephew's a very sweet guy and doesn't get upset, doesn't get angry with his uncle. It's a good lesson to us. Doesn't judge him. And responds to him with his saying, you know, what good is Christmas and the Christmas spirit ever done you? And so he answers, and again, my sense is that these are all foils for Dickens. This is Dickens speaking. There are many things from which I may have derived good, but for which I have not profited. What a lesson for our society, where so much is about how much is there any profit in this? Right? We live in a culture where everything's about making profit. Even if you're doing good, there's got to be some profit in it. He said, there are many things I've derived good, but which I have not profited, I dared say. Christmas among the rest. Actually, I've always thought of Christmas time, apart from the veneration due its sacred name, as a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open up their shut-up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. Right, so they're very profound, right? That most men and women during the year have shut up hearts and think of the people below them. And here we're talking about, he's talking economically below them, as if they were another race of people who come into his office. And so basically they are, looking for charitable donations. And they say at this festive time of year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are of want of common comfort, sir. And again, this could be taken out of our current political dialogue. What does Scrooge say? Are there no prisons? Plenty of prisons, they said. And the workhouses, are they not still in operation? They are, they said, even though we wish they were not. And the treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then? Both are very busy. Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I am very glad to hear it, said Scrooge. The gentleman rejoined, under the impression that they scarcely furnish a Christian cheer of mind or body to the multitude, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. I mean, they're not asking for much. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for? And Scrooge says, nothing. You wish to be anonymous. And Scrooge says, I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments that I mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there. Again, this is right out of our political dialogue today. But many can't go there, and many would rather die. If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. And then he mentions about that comment about that they would rather die than go to some of these places. Scrooge says, I don't know that. And they said, well, you might want to know that. And he said, it is not my business to know that. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with others. My occupation occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, right? Every man and woman for himself. We know that is an ethic that is very predominant today. Then we know Scrooge goes home, has a miserable, lonely meal by himself, goes home to his miserable home, dark and cold. And all of a sudden, he hears noise, various kinds of things occur, and all of a sudden he is confronted with a ghost, a dreadful apparition. And Scrooge asks, why do you trouble me? And the ghost replies, man of worldly mind, do you believe in me or not? I do, I must. But why do spirits walk the earth, and why do they come to me? And this is a wonderful line, he says. It is required of every man and woman that the spirit within them should walk abroad among their fellow human beings and travel far and wide. Right. It is required of each of us, he's saying, that we do not live just in our own little narrow universe, our own little walled-off universe, our own little gated universe. But it is our duty to go among everyone. How wonderful that we live on Nebraska Avenue here. So we don't forget the world that we live in. That we walk among our fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit does not go forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander the world and witness what it cannot share and might have shared on earth and turned to happiness. And then he cried, and he's bound in chains, so he's shaking chains. And Scrooge asks him about the chains. And again, this is very much, to me, like the Buddhist teaching on karma, cause and effect. He said, I wear the chains I forged in my life. I made it link by link, yard by yard. I girded it on my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Right. The chains that bind us, they are forged by no one else than ourselves. And how do we forge it? Link by link. Day by day, action by action, thought by thought, we are creating the chains that either bind us or free us. So is its pattern strange to you? The ghost asked. Scrooge trembled. Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? He sees the chains on Marley. He doesn't yet see the chains on himself. Scrooge thinks the way he is normal. The way he feels and thinks and believes is normal. He doesn't understand that he is bound, that it is heavy, and it's a ponderous chain. And then they talk more, and Marley describes how he's been wandering the earth in chains for the last 7 years since he died. And Scrooge, so as Marley's telling him this, Scrooge says, "But Jacob, you were always a good man of business, right? Like that should be the saving grace, right? You always were good at business. You always were good at making money, Jacob." "Business," cried the ghost, wringing its hands. "Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence, these were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business." Quite wonderful. You know, in those who are not familiar with the Buddhist path, the ideal is what's called the Bodhisattva. And the Bodhisattva is just this. If we could describe what the job of the Bodhisattva, it is the common welfare. Charity, mercy, forbearance, benevolence. This is our work. He's setting forth a very altruistic vision of what it means to be a human being, where what we do, our work, is just a small piece of that. Right? He's really clearly, this is what we're here for. And while we may have business or work, professions, jobs, they're means to this. They are not the end. But again, we live in a world today where this is so relevant. Right? Because people think the most important thing in their life is what? Their work, their business. And we devote an incredible amount of energy and time. It tires us, it stresses us. It exhausts us. And we forget what our real work is in this life. And then as Marley is taking his leave, he's a ghost, he kind of goes out the window. All of a sudden, Scrooge hears from outside kind of these wailings, inexpressibly sorrowful and self-accusatory. And he looks out the window to see what's going on. And in the sky, the dark sky in front of him, the air was filled with phantoms, wandering hither and thither in restless haste and moaning as they went. Every one of them wore chains like Marley's ghosts. Some few, they may be guilty governments, were linked together. None were free. Many had been personally known to Scrooge in their lives. He had been quite familiar with one old ghost in a white waistcoat with a monstrous iron safe attached to its ankle, who cried piteously at being unable to assist a wretched woman with an infant whom it saw below upon a doorstep. The misery with them all was clearly that they sought to interfere for good in human matters, but they had lost the power forever. If we want to do good, we have to do it now. Right? Their suffering is they no longer have that capacity. They see the suffering. But they've lost the capacity because they are chained by what? By the chains they forge, their greed, their narrowness, their insensitivity, etc. So, but basically, Marley set the stage. Everybody have a clear picture of Scrooge and what he's been up to. And basically, Marley tells him, you're going to be visited over the next 3 nights by 3 spirits. Now, this is very important. To me, this is where you get kind of the process of awakening that Scrooge goes through. And again, it's important to know that he begins where? He begins in the same place all of us. He's extreme, but he begins in the same place all of us. He's a man who suffers and doesn't know he suffers. He's a man who's devoted to himself and his activities, and has he's an extreme. He has nothing left over for anybody else. But most of us have a little left over for everybody else. But most of our focus is on ourselves. Right? So Scrooge is an extreme. And that's maybe a fault of this story, because it kind of lets us off the hook. But we have to understand that Scrooge is really about ourselves, a part of ourselves. Luckily, I would imagine we're all here, and it is not a dominating part like Scrooge, an all-consuming part like Scrooge. But the Scrooge within us is not unknown, I think, if we are honest. So this is where he begins. Deeply suffering, caught in his own loneliness of self, not feeling connected to others around him, and thinking he's good, right? He thinks he's fine. The rest of the world is crazy. Some of us may know that one too. So he has been told that he will have 3 visitors. And the first one is very interesting. I find him very interesting. We know we'll find out he is the spirit of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas past, but he's got a couple of really neat things about him. One is he's got, from the crown of his head, there sprung a bright, clear jet of light by which all was visible, and which, with doubtless the occasion of its using in duller moments, a great extinguisher for a cap, which it held under its arm. So this is often, I don't think, in the movies. He's got this incredible light that kind of comes out of his head, but it's so bright that he has this cap that he can kind of extinguish it. But this, as Scrooge looked at it, this was not the strangest quality of the spirit. For it had a belt that sparkled and glittered now in one part and now in another, and what was light one instant, another time was dark, so the figure itself fluctuated in its distinctiveness, now being a thing with one arm, now with one leg, now with 20 legs, now with a pair of legs without a head, now a head without a body, of which dissolving parts, no outline could be visible in the dense gloom wherein they all melted away. And in the very wonder of this, it would be itself again, distinct and clear as ever. So my sense is, in defining this this spirit of the past, the spirit that can take you into the past, right? I think I'm projecting onto what I think Dickens is up to. On the one hand, it has a light, so you can see clearly the past, right? It's this light, this bright, shining light that most people want it not to have. Please turn that light off. I don't want to see this. And on the other hand, it has this capacity to endlessly be changing shape. And I think that's the past, isn't it? Our past has infinite capacity of taking different shapes. Right? We can see all different things about ourselves and other people. We can see pieces. We can see glimpses. We can look at it one way and it looks like this, and we look at another way and it looks like that. So he's got this belt that lets us see how people see the past, but then he has this light to see clearly. So now, Perhaps Scrooge could not have told anybody why, if anybody would have asked him. He had a special desire to see the spirit in his cap and begged him to be covered. And the ghost says, "What? Would you so soon put out with worldly hands the light I give you? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap and forced me through whole trains of years to wear it low upon my brow?" Right? "You are the one who made this cap that prevents the light of clarity, of illumination, from being seen." Right? He's not going to take it off for him. Scrooge reverently disclaimed all intention to offend or any knowledge of having willfully bonneted the spirit any part of his life. He then made bold to inquire what business brought him here. "Your welfare," said the ghost. Now Scrooge expressed himself much obliged, but could not help thinking that a night of unbroken rest would have been more conducive to that end. The spirit must have heard him thinking, for it said immediately, "Your reclamation. Take heed. Rise and walk with me." So we see that we are now not, we are on a journey of reclamation. He's going to reclaim. We will see what he's going to reclaim. The first thing he has to reclaim is what? His past. That's the first thing we have to journey. We have to reclaim our past, something we don't want to do. And so the ghost now takes him on a journey that begins in his childhood, in his town. It's funny, Scrooge asked him, because they're going among these people in towns, and the ghost says to him, "These are but shadows of the things that have been. They have no consciousness of them," right? All our memories, all our imaginations about the past and the people that we hold in our mind, that we think are real, they're not real, do they? They, the other people that we see in our minds, they have no consciousness of us, do they? Because all our memories are just shadows. Dickens understood. So he takes them, and basically we discover what? We discover that that Scrooge started out in a happy home, but then because of economic circumstances was sent away, lonely, in a boarding school, all alone, never brought home for holidays, all separated from family, loved ones. We begin to see the conditions that molded him, that he had forgotten, because he, like us, thought, what? We are the way we are. This is who I am, isn't it? We forget that we were molded. We were not born the way we are. This is what you'll see that is being reclaimed here. But he's taking this journey where he can see how he began, how we all began, as infants. Open, happy, capable of happiness, simplicity, and how the journey. So we see him as a very lonely, unhappy child. We meet his sister, who cared for him, but died young, the very mother of his nephew, that he was so cold to. We meet Fezziwig, his first employer, when Scrooge began his work, and he was just a poor clerk. And Fezziwig is a kind of a really great guy. Even though he has a business, he's very happy, he's very caring, he treats Scrooge like part of the family. And Scrooge sees he comes to a Christmas which is full of celebration and all kinds of fun at Fezziwweek's, dancing and eating, and Fezziwick is giving everybody presents and gives everybody a present. Scrooge has forgotten himself. He's acting like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene and with his former self. It was not until now, when the bright faces of his former self were turned away from the scene, that he remembered the ghost and became conscious that it was looking full upon him, while the light upon its head burned very clear. And the ghost says about Fezziwick's giving everybody gifts, a small matter to make these silly folk so full of gratitude. Small, says Scrooge. Why is it not? He has spent only a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4 perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise? So now the ghost is acting like Scrooge, you know. It isn't, said Scrooge, heated by the remark and speaking unconsciously like his former, not his latter self. It isn't that spirit. He has the power, this is Fezziwick, he has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. Say that his power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune. Right? So we're beginning to see that his investigation, his willingness to understand the causes and conditions, and he's touched, as many of us need to touch, that pure place within us that somehow got twisted, covered up, forgotten, right? And Scrooge is beginning to touch that unconsciously. And he sees something very profound, that it's not about money. It's that Fezziwick was kind. And how was he kind? Because in his words, in his looks, in things that appear so insignificant, yet they are so significant. How we treat each other, how we relate to each other. Whether it's on these kinds of relationships, or whether it's a relationship of a supervisor or a boss to worker. And so we then encounter Scrooge, who had been engaged, and we come to a time when he's meeting with his fiancée, and she's basically breaking it off. And she says to him, when he asks her why, because she says, another idol has displaced me. And if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to, I have no just cause to grieve. What idol has displaced you, he says, a golden one. She has seen, this is a number of years after the Fezziwick scene, when Scrooge is now on his own, that he has changed, that he has become a man of business. And she has seen that the way he acts and the way he treats people and what his concerns are, that he's no longer the man that she was engaged to when they were poor. And she even says to him, be honest with me, you know, if you encountered me now, you know, forget about your commitment to me from years ago, but if you encountered me now, you know, would you marry me? And he's silent. Which just confirms to her that she's right. And so there are a few more incidents, but basically it's up to now. And Scrooge finally says, "Remove me from this place. I told you there were shadows of things that have been. If they are what they are, do not blame me. Remove me. I cannot bear it." He turned upon the ghost that was looking at him with a face, with a strange way that were the fragments of all the faces he'd ever seen. And then he disappeared. And then there is the next visit, which is from the spirit of the present. And first that spirit takes him just out into the world. And there are pages and pages of just, you know, Christmas, like in the movies. Everybody's happy and all the mistletoe and the food and the streets are bustling and everything is quite wonderful. Things are quite wonderful. And he takes him then into the home of poor people, of miners, of seamen, and shows that even there, there is great Christmas spirit. So he really shows him that the spirit of Christmas has a way of transforming people. And actually, this spirit has a kind of special thing that he kind of sprinkles like a magic wand. And so anytime there's any kind of disagreement going on or any kind of conflict or any kind of anything going on in someone's homes, he sprinkles a little bit and all of a sudden people are changed and they treat each other well again. It's a spirit of what? Of kindness. Right, the spirit of love, the spirit that puts aside all its thoughts and its judgments and its selfishness and just wants what? People to be happy and life to be good and for people to live in harmony. I mean, it's a wonderful spirit that is personified in this Christmas. But then, you know, he ends up at Bob Cratchit's house. You remember Bob Cratchit, his clerk who was so abused by him and demeaned by him. And Bob has a really nice life with his wife and his six children. But we know his youngest son, Tiny Tim, is quite ill. And Scrooge, with an interest he had never felt before, says, "Tell me if Tiny Tim will live." And the ghost says, "I see a vacant seat and a crutch without an owner. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die." "No, no," said Scrooge. "Oh, no, kind spirit, say he'll be spared." And the ghost says, "If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none of my race will ever find him here. So what? If he be to die, he'd better do it and decrease the surplus population." Scrooge hung his head to hear his own words quoted by the spirit and was overcome with penitence and grief. So we can see a transformation is occurring. But it began where? It began where he understood, where he reclaimed his past, the past as he became, and the past as he originally was. And he could separate out the wheat from the chaff. And now, having reconnected with that part of himself that had the capacity for happiness, that had the capacity for love, that had the capacity for connection, he can now go into the present and understand it at a deeper level. And we can see, for the first time, I mean, Bob Cratchit's been his employer for years and years. I mean, he's never shown any interest in Bob's family or Bob's welfare or Tiny Tim. And Scrooge hung his head to hear his own words quoted by the spirit and was overcome with penitence and grief. And the ghost says, "Man, if man you be in your heart, forbear the wicked cant until you have discovered what the surplus is and where it is. Will you decide what men shall live and what men shall die? It may be in the sight of heaven you are more worthless and less fit to live than millions like this poor man's child." Very beautiful, isn't it? all these decisions that people make about who should live and who's to die and who's more valuable. It's sort of in Buddhism, we talk about the relative and the absolute. From the absolute, all life is precious. All life is significant, right? From the point of the relative, I think my life is more important than the cockroaches. But from the cockroaches' point of view, their life is important to them. We need to see that. So even when situations occur, we know there is life, and that life is precious. That life is precious to who? To that person. To that family. You know, in this world, we see children dying, and we talk about civilian deaths and collateral damage, and not realizing what? That this is somebody's child. This is somebody's brother or sister or mother or father. And if it was ours, we would not talk that way. So he's being chastised. Much they saw and far they went, and many homes they visited, and always with a happy end. The spirit stood beside sick beds, and they were cheerful, in foreign lands, and they were close at home, by struggling men, and they were patient in their greater hope, by poverty, and always rich. In almshouses, hospital, jail, in miseries every refuge, where vain man in his little brief authority has not made fast the door and barred the spirit out, he left his blessing and taught Scrooge his precepts. And then just before the spirit departs, Scrooge sees something strange, like a foot or something, protruding from underneath his robes. And so he opens his robes and he brings forth two children, wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They knelt down at its feet and clung upon the outside of its garments. "Oh, man, look here. Look, look down here," exclaimed the ghost. What did he see? They were a boy and a girl. Yellow, meager, ragged, scowling, wolfish, where graceful youth should have filled their features out and touched them with its freshest tints. A stale and shriveled hand, like that of age, had pinched and twisted them and pulled them to shred. No change, no grit, no degradation, no perversion of humanity in any grade, through all its mysteries of wonderful creation, as monsters half so horrible and dread. Scrooge stood back, appalled. Having shown to him this way, he tried to say, "Oh, they were fine children," but the words choked themselves, rather than be parties to a lie of such enormous magnitude. Scrooge said, "Spirits, are they your children?" And the spirit said, "They are humanity's. And they cling to me, appealing from their fathers. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both, and all of their degree, but most of all, beware this boy, ignorance. For on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased." And Scrooge cries out, "Have they no refuge or resource?" And the spirit turns to him and says, "Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses?" Very powerful, right? I mean, not only, again, pointing directly, to poverty and disease and ignorance that this world allows so many children to be raised in. But more importantly, he says they are humanity's doom, right? Because they are part of the human family, the ignorance and the want that they're growing up in will affect us. right? Even if we lock them up, even if we segregate them, even if we arrest them, even if we ignore them, right? They are our doom. We are connected. That is why he's saying they are a responsibility too. So very modern. And now we get to the culmination. We have met Scrooge. We have journeyed with him into his past. He has journeyed into his past. He is awakening. He is reclaiming his humanity. Not through, it's through a practice, can you see? It's looking deeply. He's looking deeply into his life and into humanity's life. And now all of a sudden he's looking at the modern day and the situation very differently because he's waking up. And then he meets the last spirit. And I won't read all of it, but basically this spirit of Christmas to come is very dark. It can't be seen. It's cold. Ghostly eyes filled him with a vague, uncertain horror. And though he looked and looked, he could not see anything but a spectral hand and one great heap of black. Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any I have seen tonight. But I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me? There's no reply. Just a hand pointing. Lead on, spirit. And so already we see that what? That in his heart, in his words, what? He's changing. But yet, he's acted and behaved for many years in a certain way. And that is still driving him. And so we journey into the future, a year from now. And he takes many journeys, including the empty chair in the Cratchit's house for Tiny Tim. And he sees many other things. But finally, what he thinks is he sees his own death. He sees a funeral that no one comes to. He sees his housekeepers and others taking all his few possessions from his bed, including the clothes, and just ripping it off him and taking it to be sold at the pawn shop. Might have come here on Nebraska Avenue to sell it, who knows. Taking all their stuff to the pawn shop and how everybody speaks so dismissively about this man. He hasn't still figured out it's him, but he's really going to get, whoo, what a miserable human being and what a way to end your life alone, nobody caring. So he's in the graveyard. Dark and gloomy. He's been on this dark journey this evening. And he knows as he gets closer to the gravestone whose name is written on it. And then he says to the spirit, are these the shadows of the things that will be? Or are they the shadows of the things that might be? Men's courses will foreshadow certain ends to which are preserved and they must lead. But if the courses be departed from, the ends will change. Say it is thus, what you will show me. So again, this is a very key piece, right? He can see. that because of all his actions, of body, as we say in Buddhism, of body, speech, and mind from the past, they are leading his life in a certain direction. In the same way, all of us, because of all our actions and conditions, our life is unfolding with a certain kind of movement. But now, in this night, Scrooge has stepped out of that, and he can look at it with clarity and understanding. And all of a sudden he's saying, I understand all that, but is it possible if one changes, to make a different future, even though this seems to be the future in which things are moving, is it possible to move it in a radically different direction? And what could be more radical than not dying? Good spirit, he's now down on the ground, prostrate before him. Your nature intercedes for me and pities me. Assure me that I may change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. You see, and I will live in the past, the present, the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I shall not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone. In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and detained it. The spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him. And then, of course, what? He finds himself where? In his bed. In his house. He has been on his own, we might call it, spiritual journey, hasn't he? This whole process has been introspective. This whole transformative process has been introspective. It is the work he has done within himself, right? It's like all of us, right? Whatever introspective, meditative, spiritual journey we're on, that we do in the meditation hall, in the meditation cushion, in our reading, in our study, in our retreats, and all the stuff we do, at the end of all that, what? Where do we return? To our beds, to our home, to our life, right? We want to wake up somewhere else, but we wake up in our own beds. Which I think is very important. It's not as if Scrooge kind of woke up and was somebody else, looking different, you know what I'm saying? He woke up in his own bed, where everybody saw him as he had always been, right? But his change is inward. His transformative change is within himself. But now he is awoken in his own bed, right? It's like all of us. Right, we leave here today, and we have a choice. Right? Are we going to continue, or are we going to act, behave, think the whole deal differently? So he wakes up, and he is happy. He is happy. And he's just amazed. And I see this very much as if he's had what I would call an enlightenment experience. He's had a transformative experience in which everything is seen differently. And how do we know that it's a genuine transformative experience where everything is seen differently? Because it feels. It's not just conceptual. Many of our experiences, our changes, our insights are conceptual. But we know this is real because he feels it. I'm as light as a feather. I am as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. Right? He's laughing. He's crying. He's just beside himself. He's had a real experience. Right? He feels differently. And all he wants to do is go out in the world. And all of a sudden, he just laughed and laughed. And Dickens writes, "Really, for a man who has been out of practice for so many years, it was a splendid laugh, a most illustrious laugh, the father of a long line of brilliant laughs." I think that's important for all of us. That if Ebenezer Scrooge could find that wonderful laugh still alive within him, that should give hope to all of us, that laugh is alive in us. No matter how suppressed, repressed, denied, forgotten, denied, diminished, it is still there awaiting our discovery. And we know he kind of went about and he bought the Cratchits a beautiful turkey, and he ran into the men on the that he had dismissed, and he ran into them on the street, and he gave them a donation that just shocked him. They couldn't believe it was him. He went to his nephew's house. Like, uh-oh. You know, everybody, he walks into, everybody's quiet, you know. And he's just happy and grateful and joined the fun. He is different. And he even plays a prank on the next morning to Bob Cratchit. When Bob comes into work a few minutes late, Scrooge begins by kind of, "Cratchit," he calls him in and all that. But what does he do? He gives him a raise, and therefore I'm going to raise your salary. Bob trembled, got a little nearer to the backing away. He thought that Scrooge had gone crazy. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down, holding him, and calling to the people in the court for help and for a straitjacket. And Scrooge said with an earnestness that could not be mistaken, "A Merry Christmas, Bob. A Merry Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, that I've ever given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family, and we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a Christmas bowl of smoking bishop. Bob, make up the fires, buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit." Right, so he has shown him in this very direct and personal way what? That his transformation is real, because it's alive in his interactions with life, with people. It's no longer just about who? About me. Right? I mean, Scrooge has spent this morning only thinking about what? How can I benefit others? How can I make others happy? Right? How can I use whatever resources I have to help other people? And so it ends. "And Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became a good a friend, as good a master, as good a man, as the good old city knew, or any good old city, town, or borough in the good old world would know. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him. But he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter at the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him." So this is the Enlightenment experience of Ebenezer Scrooge. It certainly should inspire all of us to know that if many of us here say, you know, I may not be perfect, but I'm certainly not Ebenezer Scrooge. And we can see that if Ebenezer Scrooge can transform himself in one night by this going through this transformative process of reclaiming his original nature. In Buddhism, we talk about Buddha nature, we talk about things like that, our original nature, our true mind. But this is what we're talking about. You know you've done that when you are free of all your conditioning, of all your limitations, of all your narrownesses. And there is nothing left but a great openness and embrace of life and everyone in it. And we really understand that we are all in this together. We are one family, and not just once a year. So thank you.